Hello, I'm Malcolm Bernstein. It is time for the American Israelite program. It's the news of the Jews, and we do need to talk. That's the name of a series that's going to be at the Meyerson Jewish Center. Recognizing that society is at a critical point in the relationship with Israel, a relationship strained by increasingly divergent political views and priorities, the Jewish Federation of Cincinnati has been holding a series of community conversations through its initiative, We Need to Talk. As Americans are moving toward the extremes and surrounding themselves with like-minded individuals, often the conversation has stopped. We Need to Talk as an attempt at restarting dialogue, not with the goal to reach consensus, but to create understanding among people with diverse opinions. As a culmination of the initiative, the Federation and its Jewish Community Relations Council are hosting a series of events this fall in partnership with the Meyerson Jewish Community Center. On October 29th, Yossi Klein Halevi, the author of the New York Times bestseller, Letters to My Palestinian Neighbor, will speak. The book is simply and personally an exploration of a complex topic that often feels far away and impersonal. This is one Israeli author's attempt to bridge what many see as an unbridgeable divide by doing something originally and bafflingly simple at the same time. By speaking directly to his Palestinian neighbors in a series of 10 letters. Halevi is an award-winning author, thinker, and commentator on Jewish and Israeli affairs. He will speak at 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 29th at the Meyerson JCC. On November 5th, Dennis Ross, ambassador, counselor, and William Davidson Distinguished Fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Prior to that, he served 2 years as Special Assistant to President Obama and National Security Council Senior Director for the Central Region, and a year as Special Advisor to Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. Ross played a leading role in shaping United States' involvement in the Middle East peace process and dealing directly with the parties in negotiations. A highly skilled diplomat, Ross was the U.S. point man on the peace process in both the George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton administrations. He was instrumental in assisting Israelis and Palestinians to reach the 1995 interim agreement. He also successfully brokered the 1997 Hebron Accord, facilitated the 1994 Jordan-Israel peace treaty, and extensively worked to bring Israel and Syria together. He will speak on Tuesday, November 5th, also at the Meyerson JCC. And then, on November 17th, is the Global Day of Jewish Learning. Words matter, from ancient arguments to modern meanings, from raising our voices to remaining silent. Words have power. Words can create. Words can harm or heal. Words can explain or they can obscure. Even silence speaks volumes. The Global Day of Jewish Learning is from 1 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, November 17th at the JCC. The event will feature leading thinkers, scholars, and rabbis and will explore Jewish wisdom and the way words influence people's thoughts and the world. As part of the event, the world's leading Jewish podcast, Tablet Magazine's Unorthodox, we'll record an episode live from the Cincinnati event on November 17th. At the Skirball Museum over at Hebrew Union College, JIR, over at the campus on Clifton Avenue, a modern Israeli art exhibit continues. It features 9 of the most important Israeli artists of the 20th century. The exhibition continues at the Skirball Museum at HUCJIR through January 5th, 2020. Whether inspired by personal spirituality, the timelessness of the land, or the pull of modernity, Anna Tichko, Mordecai Arden, Yossi Bergner, Marcel Janko, Menashe Kadishman, Reuven Rubin, Ivan Schwerbel, Shalom of Safad, and David Gerstein achieved prominence in the history of Israeli art. Really gifted to the Skirball Museum by Nancy Berman and Alan Block, many of the works were purchased directly from the artists or from distinguished early Israeli galleries by Nancy Berman's parents, Philip and Muriel Berman. The Cincinnati Skirball Museum was one of only three institutions selected to receive gifts from the collection. Public programs in conjunction with the exhibition, which opened on September 19th, are as follows. Take 10, A Close Look at Israeli Modern Art, was at 7 p.m. yesterday, October 16th. That was a slide exhibition focusing on 10 works in the exhibition and the careers of 9 artist representative. There will be another exhibition on another event on Tuesday, November 19th from noon to 2 p.m., a lunch and learn. Enjoy a casual lunch while viewing a brief slide presentation about the artists represented in the exhibition and their important contributions to the development of modern art in Israel. An exhibition walk and talk is included, and reservations are required. The objects were a gift of Nancy Berman and Philip, her parents were Philip and Muriel Berman, Nancy Berman and Alan Block. Berman was the curator of the HUC Skirball Museum in Los Angeles from 1972 to 1995 and served as director of the museum of the Skirball Cultural Center from 1996 to 2002. Cincinnati area college students have earned exciting internships in Israel. Being thrown into an apartment in the middle of Israel with a new job and new responsibilities can be an unnerving experience. That was definitely the predominant thought for 32 Jewish Cincinnati interns when they traveled to Tel Aviv for Onward Israel. This year's class of interns arrived in Tel Aviv on June 4th for an 8-week stay. Sycamore High School alumni Will Coleman said, "We were situated less than a 500-foot walk from the northern entrance of the famous Shuk HaKarmel. We were about a 15-minute walk from the beach, and a long but reasonable trek to both the Dizengoff Center and Sirona Market. Each day was an opportunity to go to the beach, but we also spent time exploring the many streets and attractions within walking distance of our apartment." Coleman, a junior who's studying journalism at Indiana University, spent his summer as a communication strategist, interning at a tech startup called InSounds. He said, "During the program, I figured out that part of your internship experience is committing worthwhile effort and time into it. You get out of your internship whatever you put into it, so if you want to get attention as an intern, you're doing yourself a favor by being active in conversations with bosses and co-workers around the office." The Onward Israel program is open to Cincinnati area Jewish young adults who have previously traveled to Israel. The trip is funded by a Cincinnati Journeys High School graduate travel grant and the Jewish Foundation of Cincinnati, and administered by the Jewish Federation. Participants are able to work while building their resumes. Adding to the overall enrichment for the youths is the travel, sightseeing, and weekend festivities. Coleman said, "Onward Israel showed us the country in a different light than other programs. We were set up with legitimate internships and living quarters that made us feel much more intimate with Israel's society. The most common schedule for this summer's group of interns was to spend 4 days a week working and the final weekday in educational roundtables. In addition to these weekly learning sessions, 2 full weekends were dedicated to group activities. He said, several weeks before we left for Israel, we filled out a form to gauge our interests in specific weekend programs, ranging from spirituality and mindfulness to geopolitics and ecology. Every onward participant was matched to their interest through 2-day trips. The first weekend of Shabbatons was the busiest, so most of our group was spread about the country, participating in various forms of programming. I was joined by 3 other Cincinnati participants in Tzfat for a weekend of spirituality. The 2 times I'd been to Tzfat before, my group and I had only been passing through for a few hours. This time around, I spent 2 nights in the city and finally got to experience Shabbat while there. People tend to think of Tzfat as the city known for its art district and the majestic views from rooftops, but I can tell you that it is Shabbat in Tzfat that makes the city so special. Indeed, some of the most sacred prayers we sang at the end of the week were actually written in Tzfat in the 1500s. He said he and another student visited the studio of Avraham Lowenthal, a native of Michigan, who spent the last several years in Tzfat practicing Kabbalah and creating Kabbalist artwork. Coleman had met Avraham during a previous trip, and he decided to take the artist on his offer to come back and visit. During his visit, Lowenthal suggested that they visit a mikvah. Coleman said, mikvot are spiritually purifying, but what made this particular mikvah unique was the fact that it was a natural spring. What soon became obvious was that, as first-timers, we were getting an 100% authentic experience. When we walked away from the mikveh, we knew we'd just experienced not only the highlight of the weekend, but of the whole summer. When students are not taking part in Shabbatons, they're encouraged to use their free time to explore their host cities and the regions surrounding them. Coleman said their program travel days gave them the chance to see everything Netanya, Haifa, Jerusalem, and Beersheba had to offer. There were also a number of electives the students could sign up for, including walking tours, film viewings, and painting classes. As Coleman put it, chugim, club-like groups, were a great way to meet new people and enjoy a special type of programming. We each chose topics that interested us. We enjoyed quality time with new friends and old. We were determined to take advantage of every opportunity to explore the city. But while being in Tel Aviv was a blast and a half, I found it informative and valuable to travel the country and see what living in other parts of Israel could be like. Coleman said he wanted something different from onward Israel that he could not find anywhere else. That's exactly what I got. It's an opportunity too good for young Jews to pass up. Let's take a look here at this week's Torah commentary. And this is Shabbat Shalom. It is Chol HaMoed Sukkot. So it is different from other readings. Don't forget that on Simchat Torah, we will be changing scrolls and starting again from the beginning of Bereishit. One of the most picturesque and creative festivals of the year is the festival of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, when the entire family is involved in building and decorating a special nature home which will be lived in for an entire week. But why are we actually celebrating? And what is the true meaning of the symbol of the sukkah? Is it the sukkah of our desert wanderings, a temporary hut, which the Israelites constructed in the desert when they wandered from place to place? If so, then the sukkah becomes a reminder of all of the exiles of Israel throughout our 4,000-year history. And our thanksgiving to God is for the fact that we have survived despite the difficult climates, the persecution and pogroms which threatened to overwhelm us. Or is the sukkah meant to be reminiscent of the divine clouds of glory, which encompassed us in the desert with God's rays of splendor, the sanctuary which served as the forerunner of our holy temple in Jerusalem? In the grace after meals during the Sukkot festival, we pray that the Merciful One restore us, for us, the fallen tabernacle of David, which would certainly imply that the Sukkah symbolizes the holy temple. The Talmud in Sukkot 11 brings a difference of opinion between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer as to which of these options is the true significance of our celebration. I would like to attempt to analyze which I believe to be the true meaning and why. In fact, the major biblical description of the festivals is found in chapter 23 of the book of Leviticus. There are two textual curiosities which need to be examined. The three festivals, which were always considered to be our national festivals, and which also biblically appear as the desert festivals, are Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, commemorating when we left Egypt, when we received the Torah at Sinai, and when we lived in desert booths. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are more universal in nature and not at all related to the desert sojourn. It seems strange that in the biblical exposition of the Hebrew calendar, Pesach and Shavuot are explained, after which comes Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and only at the conclusion of the description comes Sukkot. Now, of course, one can argue that this is the way the months fall out in the calendar year. However, that too is strange. After all, the Israelites left Egypt for the desert. Presumably, they built their booths immediately after the festival of Pesach. Would it not have been more logical for the order to be Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur? Secondly, the festival of Sukkot is broken up in two parts. Initially, the Torah tells us, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, On the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the festival of Sukkot, 7 days for God. These are the festivals of the Lord, which you shall call high convocations." That from Leviticus chapter 23, verses 33 to 38. It would seem that these last words conclude the biblical description of the festivals and the Hebrew calendar. But then, in the very next verse, the Torah comes back again to Sukkot, as if for the first time. "But on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you gather in the crop of the land, you shall celebrate God's festival for a 7-day period. You shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of a citron tree, the branches of date palms, twigs of a plaited tree, the myrtle, and willows of brooks, and you shall rejoice before your Lord the God for a 7-day period. You shall dwell in booths for a 7-day period, so that your generations will know that I caused the people of Israel to dwell in booths when I took them from the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." Why the repetition? And if the Bible now wishes to tell us about the four species which we are to wave in all directions in thanksgiving to God for his agricultural bounty, why was this verse not linked to the previous discussion of the Sukkot booths? And why repeat the booths again this second time? I've heard it said, in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that this repetition of Sukkot with the commandment concerning the four species is introducing an entirely new aspect of the Sukkot festival, the celebration of our entering into the land of Israel. Indeed, the great philosopher legalist Maimonides explains the great joy of the festival of Sukkot as expressing the transition of the Israelites from the arid desert to a place of trees and rivers, fruits and vegetables, as symbolized by the four species. In fact, this second Sukkot segment opens with the words, "But on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you gather the crops of the land of Israel, you shall celebrate this festival to the Lord." Hence, there are two identities to the festival of Sukkot. On the one hand, it is a desert festival, alongside Pesach and Shavuot, which celebrates our desert wanderings and survivals while living in the flimsy booths. From that perspective, perhaps it ought to have found its place immediately after Pesach, in terms of the calendar and certainly before the description of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in the biblical text. However, the second identity of Sukkot, the fourth species, which represent our conquest and inhabitancy of our homeland and signal the beginning of redemption, belongs after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the festivals of God's kingship over the world and his divine temple, which is to be a house of prayer for all nations. This aspect of Sukkot turns the Sukkah into rays of divine splendor and an expression of the holy temple. So which Sukkot do we celebrate? Both at the same time. But when we sit in the Sukkah, where are we sitting in transitory booths representative of our wandering, or rather in a divine sanctuary protected by the rays of God's glory? I think it depends upon whether we are celebrating the festival in the diaspora or in the land of Israel. Shabbat Shalom from Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, Chancellor Emeritus of Or Torah Stone and Chief Rabbi of Ephrat, Israel. Now, he did not speak of the days following 7 days of Sukkot, which are Shemini Atzeret and Simchat Torah. Although Hoshana Rabbah may technically be the last day of Sukkot, the rabbis decided to treat Shemini Atzeret and Simchat Torah as part of Sukkot because its significance is unequivocally informed by Sukkot itself. Two cryptic references in the Torah cause the confusion about the status of Shemini Atzeret. In both Leviticus and Numbers, God commands that the eighth day, Shemini, referring to Sukkot, is to be a sacred occasion and an atzeret, generally translated as a solemn gathering. The inherent problem is that no one really knows what an atzeret means. Possibly it comes from the word atzar, meaning stop, and this implies that we are to refrain from work. On the other hand, atzeret may also be defined by its textual context, which implies that it is some sort of deliberate extension of the prior 7 days. This lack of verbal clarity is likely the reason why the rabbinic sages seem to struggle with the precise meaning of the holiday. The earliest rabbinic reference to Shemini Atzeret calls it Yom Tov Aharon Shel HaHag, the last day of the festival. The Talmud in Ta'anit 20b to 31a, however, declares the eighth day as a festival in its own right. At the same time, the Talmud in Ta'anit 28b attempts to distinguish it from Sukkot, as there are 70 temple sacrifices given throughout Sukkot, compared to only one given on Shemini Atzeret. The distinction was only theoretical, as the temple had been destroyed 5 centuries prior to the redaction of the Talmud. Cutting through this puzzle, the most appealing depiction of the holiday may be that of Samson Raphael Hirsch, a 19th century Orthodox rabbi who lived in Germany. He infers the meaning of the holiday from the word atzeret, which he renders as to gather or to store up. Accordingly, on this eighth day of Sukkot, the final day of celebration, we must store up the sentiments of gratitude and devotion acquired throughout the entire fall holiday season. Nearly 2 months will pass until we celebrate another holiday, that of Hanukkah. Although the observations of Simeon Yetzeris generally share in the characteristics of the rest of Sukkot, there are four significant differences. The first is that there is no more shaking of the lulav and etrog. Second is that although we have our meals and recite Kiddush in the Sukkah, we no longer say the blessing to sanctify us through the commandment to dwell in it, as we did the previous 7 days. The third is that in the synagogue after Torah reading, we recite Yizkor. And finally, the special prayer for rain is added to the repetition of Musaf, and thus begins the period of an additional call for rain in our prayers, which lasts until Passover. It is customary for the leader of the Geshem prayer to wear a kittel, as was done during the divine judgment of the high holidays. Wearing the garment indicates that this is the season of divine judgment for the future year's rainfall, the time when we pray that God's goodwill may afford us the appropriate amount. And having heard all of this about the Torah, there is a new center to grapple with Torah and technology that aims to be an international resource. This is the Jerusalem College of Technology, which announced the launch of the Torah and Technology Research Center, which will provide specialized expertise necessary to respond to the complex ethical and halachic, the Jewish legal issues of our times. It'll deal with things like, is it permissible to ride in an autopilot vehicle on Shabbat? And can meat grown from cells taken from animals be kosher or even parv? And can you send Amazon's Alexa voice commands on Shabbat? These are some of the matters to be considered. Let's look at the calendar. On October 19th, this coming Shabbat, Simchat Torah. On Sunday, October 20th, there's going to be a Sukkot height at Wise Temple, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and Simchat Torah on Monday at Adith Israel Eitz Chaim at all of the shuls and temples, usually 6:30 or 6 o'clock p.m. On Wednesday, October 30th, the Women's Philanthropy of Federation at the JCC. On Thursday, the Jewish Foundation of Cincinnati Trustee Meeting, Executive Committee and Board Meeting, and Jewish Home of Cincinnati Board Meeting. Light your candles tonight at 6:35, and Shabbat will end at 7:34. This has been the American Israelite Program, The News of the Jews. I'm Malcolm Bernstein, and I'll be back with you next Friday. Till then, have a guten Woch. Bye-bye.